ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Economics.
And of course, a Wednesday night on Nightlife, even when it's me and not Phil in the chair, does mean a chance to talk economics. And we do it with Ian Verrender, who is ABC's chief business correspondent. Ian, always great to have you on Nightlife. Thank you.
Good to be here, Nick.
Now, this week has been an interesting one because on Monday, federal government came in with a gas reservation policy. Gas exporters forced to hold back supply for customers on those eastern states as well. A big effort from the Albanese government to drive down domestic energy bills and prevent shortfalls. Now, just quickly, I know Energy Minister Chris Bowen kind of explained the government's rationale in acting on this issue. We've got some of that audio.
Most Australians think that Australians should have first rights to the gas that's under Australian soil, Australian waters, and that gas should be available to Australians at reasonable prices. And Australians are right about that.
And he even went into a bit more detail on the scheme and how he saw it working.
We've consulted on various models. We've consulted on various options. But we've decided to support as a preferred model for further consultation the simplest, easiest to implement, easiest to understand model of not allowing gas exports into the future unless the government is satisfied that domestic demand is catered for first, and we believe that that can be achieved by a national reservation of 15 to 25%.
Ian, it feels very complex at the moment, but what is involved here? Because this has been a long time coming.
Oh, a long time coming. It should never have happened in the first place, Nick. I mean, you know, we've had the situation in Australia where we are one of the world's biggest exporters of liquefied natural gas, and yet it costs more here than what it does elsewhere in the world. You can buy Australian gas cheaper in the markets to which we export than you can get it here. So that's why there's, you know, this whole problem that we've had in the past few years. One of the supposed solutions was, and several companies have actually built storage facilities for this very purpose. One resolve was, let's go to Japan and South Korea and buy the gas back that we've sold them, ship it back here, and turn it back into gas, and it'd be cheaper than actually buying it on the domestic market. This is how ludicrous the entire situation has become.
So is this going to move the needle when it comes to pricing for the average Australian?
Not immediately, because this is going to take some time to implement. The gas market is mind-bogglingly complex. I mean, I've been looking at this for a couple of years now, and I still can't really get my head around the terminology and the way it all works. And partly that's because it's become very complex, because you've had all of these rules inserted over the top of the way the market acts and works, simply to try and secure enough gas into the system. I mean, we've had three prime ministers now try to get some kind of sanity into this market. You had Malcolm Turnbull, you had Scott Morrison, and then Anthony Albanese, all trying to inject some kind of sanity in there. They had the big stick, they've had price controls. None of it worked. Now, this model, well, we don't know, we know the broad model, but we don't know a lot of the detail around it yet. But what this is planning to do is to put all of the onus onto the exporters. An alternative model was to have the entire industry, so that's domestic gas operators only, and domestic gas operators and the exporters and everybody in together supplying the domestic market. But the real problem here is not just the three export consortia, it's one of those consortia. So the Santos-led consortium is the one that has been the problem. It has, since its inception, it has not found enough gas to put through its plant and to deliver to the contracts that it wrote with its customers in Asia. And so what it's done since it first started operating a decade ago is to essentially plunder the domestic gas market, take the gas out of the domestic market and send it offshore to meet their contracts.
Ian, I mean, I think most people would be shocked to hear that.
Well, that's just what's happened. And you know, for the past decade, the industry has kind of stood united and basically said, look, the big problem here is that we don't have enough supply. We need to get more gas out of the ground to... But that was never going to be a solution, because why would more gas be a solution when we're already the world's biggest exporter?
Mm.
The problem has been this one consortium that has really stuffed things up terribly. And when it got down to the crunch, the other two big exporters, that's the one led by Origin and the other one led by Shell, the United Front fractured, and the other two exporters went, hang on a second, we're not going to be picking up the tab for you guys. We've been putting gas into the domestic market. You've been taking it out. In fact, the Santos consortium has taken out around about 2 years worth of domestic gas supply since about 2018. That's the amount of gas that they've been pulling out of the system. So the others have all said, well, we already meet our obligations under any kind of gas reservation policy if it's implemented. You're the one that's going to have the problem. So we're quite happy with it, with the gas reservation policy as it stands. Of course, we have to figure out the details and how much is going to have to be reserved. It can be anywhere between 15 and 25% of production, but we haven't figured that out yet.
And those three groups you're talking about, they've got quite the stranglehold when it comes to East Coast and gas, don't they?
They do. They control about 90% of all the gas territory in the country. And they've done that through buying up smaller operations, putting their foot on reserves right across the East Coast. So, going into some kind of partnership with smaller players as well. So, yeah, they control about 90%. So, you know, the original idea of not interfering in the market, which was what happened 15 years ago when this was all a project, the idea was we shouldn't interfere in a free market. But free market has a couple of fundamental propositions behind it. And one is many buyers, many sellers. That's what makes a free market. When you've got millions of buyers in the domestic market and you've got three sellers, that's not a free market. And this is what the problem has revolved all around. Now, you know, back in 2009, when this industry was first proposed, Anna Bligh was the Premier of Queensland at the time, and she stated categorically that we need to secure domestic supplies, and there's a couple of options on the table. Option one is a gas reservation policy, right? And that was somehow, you know, there was an inquiry and that was just all buried. The federal government, Julia Gillard was the Prime Minister, they had a debate in Cabinet around a gas reservation policy, because one already existed in Western Australia and it worked fabulously. But the federal government kiboshed it as well. Now, part of the problem here is the extent to which the industry has pervaded politics. And, you know, this happens in a lot of industries. There's a lot of vested interests that, you know, spend huge amounts of money on lobbying campaigns. But when it comes to resources, I mean, one measure, I guess, is that if you cast your mind back to 2001, every single resources minister since 2001 has become a lobbyist for the fossil fuels group, right? Every single one of them, apart from one, which is Keith Pitt. But everyone since then has. So that gives you a bit of an idea of just how pervasive and how the money gets spent and how the influence is peddled. And so we didn't end up with a gas reservation policy on the East Coast when everybody knew we should have had one.
And I know the answer. It's just to be very clear, all that incredible money made from exporting, that's not going into government coffers necessarily, is it?
Well, the petroleum resources rent tax doesn't apply to onshore gas. It only applies to offshore gas. And in the first few years of the projects, when they got up and running, they made enormous losses. So they weren't paying tax at all there. I mean, it looked like the three export facilities, it looked like all of them were going to be white elephants. They did eventually make quite a lot of money, and particularly through the inflation, you know, crunch that we've just gone through, and especially after Russia invaded Ukraine and energy prices went ballistic. So you know, they made enormous amounts of money. And one of the things that's really, you know, I think you need to understand with gas, people think, oh, gas, you know, it's very important, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But gas actually underpins our electricity prices. Gas is the last element that goes into our electricity generation. And because it's the last element, it is the most important factor. And when gas prices treble, as they did once we started exporting them from the East Coast, that pushes up the price of electricity enormously. And it's one of the big factors behind those huge price increases that we've all seen in our electricity bills. That, in turn, was a major factor behind the inflation crunch that we had. And that, in turn, was a major driving factor behind our interest rate rises. So this, you know, has a pervasive effect right through the economy.
Final question, is this gas reservation policy, is it a done deal? Is it going to get through? Are we going to see opposition to it?
I would suspect that the opposition will be largely in favour of it. They might argue around some of the details and how it's put together. But you might recall that Peter Dutton went to the last election with a gas reservation policy in the back pocket there. It was one of his signature policies. Now, you know, there was a couple of options on the table when they came to it. I think the government has actually chosen the right one. Peter Dutton's idea was to actually tax exports above a certain level, and that may have worked. It would have worked, and it would have had worked much quicker than the proposal the government's gone with. But it could have had the impact of actually allowing Santos to just simply take more gas out of the domestic market again. So, you know, I think this is the right way to go. This puts the onus onto the Santos consortium to actually put gas into the system.
And then sometime after 2027, prices might come down?
You'd hope so, yeah. Well, I think we will see, you know, greater supply, and that will result in lower prices. There's also a looming global gas glut that's coming because both Qatar and America are ramping up their export facilities and their liquefaction facilities as well. So you're going to see a lot more gas in the system, so that'll bring prices down as well.
Ian, always incredible to have your expertise on Nightlife. Thank you.
Good to be here, Nick.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.